This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to today's ILTA podcast recording entitled Making Data Governance Digestible. I'm your moderator, Chris Hockey, Director of Information Governance and Management at Bond, Schoeneck & King. I'm thrilled to be joined by our speakers today, Neil Burge, founder, CEO of Cognopia, and Steve Bradley, Director, HBR Consulting. Welcome, Neil and Steve.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
So let's start with just kind of a high-level overview. So information governance and data governance may often be used interchangeably. Could you help our listeners understand what the key differences are and why it is important to differentiate them? And maybe we could start with you, Neil.
Yeah, no problem. So, you know, I think when we look at this, I'll just start with a definition that we use for data governance, which is the exercise of executive authority over business data. So relatively simple, but the nuance is always the devil's in the detail. Setting that up means that you've got to get people in the right roles and to allocate decisions around what rules we're going to put around data, who should do what with data, when, where, how, and why. And so we put into place a structure where we've got typically some exec stakeholders in a committee, some what we would call data owners, senior level people that are accountable for their data in their domain, acting as a council, and then data stewards in bigger organizations, which are people who are more hands-on and can actually give us context around the data that's flowing. If you set that organization up correctly, I don't really mind whether it's information governance or data governance. And actually, in one of our clients at the moment, they're going through a process of digitization and digital transformation, where they're moving from a lot of paper-based records and physical records through to digital records. And the same apparatus can make rules about physical records in the same way that it can about digital records. So I'm not too bothered what people choose for their terminology. I guess it really is about the scope of governance in your organization. And if you sit down and you say, okay, what content types are we governing? Is it physical records or is it only digital records? That might change whether you choose to call it information governance or whether you choose data governance. But fundamentally, if you get the right people in the right roles making the right decisions, they can use the same structures to discuss anything that's information versus anything that's digital data that's sat somewhere on an electronic record.
So Steve, what's your perspective on the kind of differences between information governance and data governance?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I agree with a lot of what Neil just said. In fact, all of it. And I think that's a loaded question because the terms can mean very different things to different people, different contexts. In addition to information data, you'll hear terms like content or documents or records that could be thrown in. And in some organizations, those are all interchangeable terms. You know, like Neil mentioned, that can refer to digital content, could also refer to hard copy paper. And so it reminds me of the quote from the Princess Bride movie. When Inigo Montoya reacts to Vicini saying inconceivable, he's like, you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. So, you know, we always say it's important to understand what people mean when they're using terms like data or information, what definitions may already be in place in the organization. Are these words being used interchangeably? Do they carry very real and distinct meanings in a particular organization's context? So that being said, though, the common ground certainly between IG and DG is governance. So, and it's really about control and consistency, which I think echoes what Neil was saying about authority over business data. So what controls are in place to ensure the data is being valued, used properly? Are people applying these rules in a consistent manner? And also in terms of differences, you know, definitions aside, the general difference I see with IG and DG is also one of focus, where information governance or IG is traditionally more associated with legal, e-discovery, compliance, records management realm, document management related concerns. So information at an aggregate level that also focuses on areas like retention and disposition, legal hold, bleeding over into information security, data privacy protection, et cetera. DG then traditionally is referring, or data governance, to more associated with IT, more granular level, elemental focus on master data management, data quality, leading over into data science, analytics, marketing, you know, with a focus more on data quality, availability, discovery, optimization, things of that nature. So again, it's good to get your definitions clear up front, so to make sure you're speaking the same language.
That's great. Yeah, and I'm a big fan of anyone that can throw in a Princess Bride right. quote and reference there. I think that's great. So let's pivot then to, so knowing that, you know, we, depending on kind of the scope and how people are viewing it, that we may be able to still use these interchangeably. So what should the objective of a data governance program be? And Steve, why don't we start with you this time?
Sure. I think it's back to what I was mentioning earlier, it's control and consistency. So, you know, as Neil mentioned, executive authority over business data. Also, it's how that brought about in terms of consistent action. And so, and given the potential confusion over the terms, another C word is important, clarity. So it's important to make sure everyone up front's clear with how these terms are defined, so everyone's on the same page and they're in alignment in terms of what the key drivers are. So what problem are you trying to solve, you know, or what type of information and data or content are you trying to govern and why? So for example, if the key stakeholders are in legal, they may be saying data governance, but in fact, they're really more concerned with disposing of rot, you know, redundant, outdated, trivial information, dark data, unstructured content, which that could also involve hard copy box records if they have any of that hanging around, as well as unstructured content on file shares, email. So it's not a focus on data per se, say in structured systems, but a more strategic or business-oriented stakeholder may be saying information governance. In fact, they're concerned about data quality optimization to increase the value of their data so they can turn loose a team of data scientists to make hay with it. Or a partner law firm might want to address the transformation that's occurred as a result of COVID with everyone working remotely, you know, using technologies like Zoom now and Microsoft Teams in ways they've never done before. So the focus could be on workplace digital transformation, maximizing investment, say, in Microsoft 365, Office 365, you know, while also ensuring that client matter lifecycle, associated document management and governance needs are being addressed. So again, it's important to clarify exactly what type of data or information you're trying to govern, and then what are the drivers and why exactly you're concerned about it.
I mean, I agree with that. I think if you look at the drivers specifically, you know, if I look at the first step of the methodology we have when we work with new clients, we start with a data strategy or a digital strategy, whatever you want to call it. Foundationally, what should this thing be doing? Well, first and foremost, what does your business do? How do you generate revenues? How do you generate profits today? Next, where do you want to go? You know, are you in a growth mode? Are you in a cost-cutting mode? You know, are there big risks coming in to your business? What's the operating environment look like? And obviously COVID and the changes that the sort of spanner that's thrown in the works. So once you've got a picture of where the business is trying to go, then you look at where is data or information supporting that transformation and supporting those objectives, where is it currently potentially holding those objectives back? And that tells us that this is the most important data, or this is the data we've got to latch onto now, because clearly things change and you need to you know, keep this finger on the pulse there. So, you know, what should the objective be? Well, the objective has to be to provide high quality data and information to support the business objectives of the organization that you're working for. And therefore, you've got to put a strategy in place that links up what you're doing with data to what the business is attempting to achieve, and make sure that you provide high quality data or you know, novel capabilities, if that's what's needed, to support that business objective.
Great. So data governance can be very intimidating if you look at it as, you know, one person's job. So how can professionals that are engaged in information governance or data governance work go about engaging the enterprise in good data governance practices? And Neil, we'll start with you on this one.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And a lot of the people that we've worked with find themselves wanting to do this. Often it bubbles up out of an IT role where people see the impact of bad data, or they see the silos that exist across IT. And they know that if they could only govern this, they could improve the data and they could unstick some friction in their organization. But they don't tend to have that direct connection to the C-suite or someone with power and authority that might be able to push this agenda for them. So it really depends. If you are finding yourself in that situation, then you've got to sort of grab yourself and go back to what I was just saying. What are the strategic ambitions of your business, and which stakeholders in your organization with the power, budget and influence to help you are likely to, you know, can you find something that they're working on, one of their top three priorities, and show how better data can support that by driving up revenues, driving out costs or risks or whatever it may be. and then build from there and start to make the case more broadly that you need more help to do this. Really, you need a proper business case to establish this. Often people start without that, and we've seen that the data maturity and our assessments of organizations with bad business cases or no business cases, they're at the kind of initial or just above the initial to the defined level in our measurements. And actually, those that have proper formalized business cases are much higher. They'll score about 3.5 out of 5 on our score rather than sort of 1 to 2. So definitely you've got to line up with what the business cares about and then put a dollar figure on it that somebody senior enough is going to care about and put some budget behind you so that you can actually get this job done.
Great. Steve, anything you want to add to that?
Sure. Yeah, just to echo a lot of what Neil said, another way of looking at this, I go back to, background in information governance. Sedona Conference had a good definition we like to use, which speaks of information governance as a coordinating function. It seeks to leverage, coordinate, align, and reconcile various information-focused disciplines, initiatives, areas of concern that may exist in any organization. So just using a traditional lens, consultant lens of people, process, technology, a great starting point we use is to identify all the people in the organization who are involved in these information-focused disciplines. So that can include traditional records, document management people, can include legal, compliance, privacy, risk, certainly IT. They're often involved in information security. And then you get into folks that may have more formalized roles around data governance, data stewards, architects, scientists, or even other stakeholders on the business or strategic side, like folks in marketing, logistics, et cetera. So then we look at processes. So what are the processes, standards, or policies that are in place? What extent do they overlap, align, or conflict with each other? It's not uncommon to see tension between someone in legal, focused on rising e-discovery costs, and they want to get rid of data. And then you've got someone else in the org is focused on optimizing data and they want to keep everything forever. So understanding that and being able to reconcile and align with those competing interests is important. And in our third step, we look at what technology or resource investments are in place. So if your goal is to begin building a data map, might be a good idea to understand if someone else in the organization is already doing that. Like Neil mentioned, sometimes there's silos, left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. So being able to leverage a tool with information you could align with or leverage for your own purposes is useful. You're not starting from scratch. And in fact, you may be scratching someone else's back in the organization and starting to build those coalitions and additional support that's needed.
Great. So Steve, how can IG professionals best make a business case for a data governance program in order to secure resources?
Yeah, I think the key is to focus on what's valuable within your organization. So a key mistake I see people making, they begin building a business case and they're focused on their particular expertise or area of concern, but they don't consider what business is my company in or my firm. So the key with a business case to me is understanding your company or firm's business. What does it value? So the more that you can link the benefits of your specific initiative for data governance, information governance to measures, metrics, values that align with what top executives in your organization or partners in your firm see as valuable, then the more successful your business case is likely to be. So that typically translates into something like preventative strategies that reduce costs or risk to the organization, such as reduction of, outdated data, rot, dark data that has to be produced at a high cost in litigation, or protection of sensitive data to avoid data breaches, and very real and tangible reputational losses that can come from those types of exposures. It can also focus on growth strategies that speak of optimizing value, increasing efficiencies, leveraging data to unearth strategic or marketable insights. So again, the more tangible and quantifiable these benefits can be articulated, the better, and the more aligned they are with the direction your organization as a whole is moving in, the more successful we'll see those be.
Great. Neil, anything you want to add to what Steve said?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything again. So, going back to the way that we do things, it sounds like it's very similar, Steve. Yeah, you've got that strategy. What's your data or information strategy? And obviously, that's got to be tied to what your business does, how you make money today and where you want it to go. But then more broadly, how does data support that? And what's it kind of doing in terms of creating friction or creating opportunity for the organization? We're working with a firm now, and actually lots of their senior executives have come and said, look, we're doing this, we believe in this, but we just can't justify investments in it too much because it's very hard for us to put a value, a dollar value on data. So I do think that, you know, there's plenty of methodologies out there. There's plenty of different approaches where you can start to put a value on data, both at the group-wide or enterprise level, down at individual use case levels, whether that's driving up revenues, cutting costs, eliminating risk, whatever happens to be the priority of your business, and right down to the individual data set level. And learning those skills, you know, these models aren't perfect. They're not supposed to be. It's very difficult to actually put a proper value on data. However, working together with your legal team, with your finance team, your risk team, and others, you can start to come up with a number that people will eventually coagulate around and agree with. And actually, in many cases, this can be vast amounts of money. You know, I think the procurement team in one of our clients has got about $70 odd million that they're targeting to get from master data initiatives, and they've already managed to take about $15 or $20 million of that. So, you know, there's a lot of money out there, cost reductions for big enterprises, and you've got to just learn as many different techniques as you can to identify value and find the right one that fits your organization.
Great, thank you. So last question for each of you. I'm wondering if you each could provide, you know, maybe one real practical strategy for ensuring the cleanliness and reliability of data in an organization. And so, Neil, we'll start with you. What's your top strategy for that?
I mean, there's a dozen of them, but I think the most important thing for ensuring data quality is you've got to get business stakeholders to understand that they have a role to play in the quality of the data that they use. And actually to come together and to sit down and say, okay, you know, let's say it's a customer field or customer record. What are the 12 to 15 different fields about that customer that we've got to get right? And what are you expecting to see in these fields? And then working together with the IT tech team to profile data, even if it's just doing it manually. I think Tom Redman talks about a Friday afternoon measurement where you take 100 of the last 100 customer records or whatever it might be, and you manually walk through it with a business person and mark, you know, where are the errors. Just doing that can surface up how many records that you're creating that are inaccurate or potentially missing information. And that can make it real to, you know, business execs and say, this is a problem. We've got to start to put in place rules around it. And those rules are some of the rules that were set by that business exec when they first told you what data they expected to see in those fields. So simple, but effective way of talking with business peers and getting them to understand that actually, you know, this they rely on this information to do their job, and, you know, having it accurate, available, timely, and not duplicated is extremely important to make sure that they can deliver the business gains that they're trying to deliver in their role.
Great, thank you. Steve, what about you? What would be your kind of top strategy for folks to ensure the cleanliness and reliability of their data?
Well, on some level, Neil stole my thunder, and I'll agree with him. You know, a lot of that focuses on people and making sure you've got, again, proper authority within the organization and buy-in, you know, to be able to get people to change. A lot of it's a culture change as well. And if people, you know, are busy and rushed and all of a sudden you're coming in with a whole new set of rules and trying to get people to change their routines, often you're not going to be successful, again, unless there's buy-in. And clarity as to why people need to do what they're needing to change, et cetera. But moving beyond people then, maybe on that process level, I think, you know, just focusing on data quality lifecycle, really identifying, you know, what problems are you actually seeing? Can you explain them? Can you spotlight and highlight them and under, you know, make it clear to people why it's a problem? What do you need to do to drive to resolution? And fix underlying gaps, and then, you know, take forward what are the preventative actions you need to put in place. Again, leveraging the tools potentially for enforcing, you know, day forward role-based access, et cetera. So I think overall, again, I'll echo back what Neil said, you know, it's that focus on people up front, proper authority, and making sure, again, the objectives and what the organization is wanting to accomplish and the problems are clearly identified and everyone's on board.
Great. Well, thank you both so much. So thank you again, Neil and Steve, for your time. And thank you to our audience for tuning into today's podcast. And we hope everyone has a wonderful day.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.